the OTB Podcast Network.
Right, you're welcome along to this week's edition of the Type 5 with Neil Tracy. Neil, you've kind of cheated this week in that, and probably good time management on your part. 5, 4 and 3, I think, are kind of similar. Are they all the same?
We need to figure out a way of actually fitting in all 5 topics this week. And okay. I thought the best way of doing that was to actually just, you know, rather than doing 3 topics in one, do one topic across 3. Is probably the best way of doing it.
I like your realism. Unlike Shane Hannan, who wants all of our players to be Leo Messi when it comes to football, you at least appreciate that living in the real world is a benefit to that.
It certainly is, yeah. So what we picked out this week is there's a couple of, 3 nice examples of just some good little variations around the line-out. 2 of them worked, 1 of them almost worked. So I think why not, rather than sitting around chatting, let's just get straight into it and make sure we actually get all 5 of these done today. So the first of these I picked out is a lovely little move Ulster tried against Northampton on Saturday night in the Challenge Cup. So this was actually coming at a really, really crucial time. Northampton had just scored another try to go back in front, and Ulster got back up. They won a penalty, cleared it up into Northampton territory. So they're just inside the Northampton half of the pitch at the moment. And this actually led to the try that brought them right back into it, which they kicked on from and won. So the first picture we're looking at here, this is just the setup of the lineout. There's 2 people we want to look at. The first of those is right at the front of the lineout. That's Eric O'Sullivan. So he's the lifter right at the front. And you can see he's marked his space just right on the 5-metre line. But there's a gap then to the first jumping pod. And then further back in the lineout is Alan O'Connor, the second row. He's going to be the man in focus in a minute or so's time. So if we move on to our next little clip, what happens here is that Alan O'Connor makes the move. He drops out and does a looping run around to the front of the lineout, while Eric O'Sullivan has pushed back towards his jumping pod a couple of yards back. So what he's done is he's created space at the front of the lineout, which Alan O'Connor is going to dart into and take a short little lineout. There's going to be no lift. It's going to be straight into his hands. And what Eric O'Sullivan's little run has done as well is he has brought the Northampton Saints prop with him, who was guarding at the front of the lineout. So there's a nice little pocket of space there, just at the front of the lineout, in front of that 5-metre channel. Remember as well, the ball has to travel 5 metres before a player can touch it. So Alan O'Connor has to get into that space beyond the 5-metre line. He can't come in and touch the ball before it. And also we've marked at the back of the lineout is Geordie Murphy, who's going to have a crucial part in this in a few seconds' time as play develops. So if we move on again, the next one we can see is Rob Herring has thrown the ball into Alan O'Connor right at the front of the line. As we can see, he's beyond the 5-metre line, so it's all fine. And what's really important as well is the throw from Rob Herring. A lot of time when teams go for these short little line-out moves, it's actually quite tricky throwing a line-out into someone, like throwing it to chest height of a player, because normally you're throwing it over your head, you're trying to get it up high into the air. You know, it's tough to get it down like that.
Without it being a bullet.
So what he's done is, if we go back to our clip there, we can see it. It's right into Alan O'Connor's chest.
Is it straight?
It is, yeah. It's right down the gap. So all he had to do was just run straight onto it. And he doesn't have to check his run to reach up and grab it. He can catch it completely in his stride. But it's all about the sell as well. Because as you can see, Ulster have lifted up their pod. They're telling the Northampton Saints, we are throwing this ball up into our number 2 jumper. That pod is going up in the air. So they have to create the illusion that this is a normal lineout, because it doesn't work other than that. There has to be an element of smoke and mirrors around all of this as well. So as we can see, Alan O'Connor has taken it, and there's a fine bit of space that he's about to run into now. And the other arrow then, a little bit further up in the screen, is where we can see Geordie Murphy. So he knows exactly what's happening here, and he is just breaking straight through. He's not hanging around to see what happens. He is making that run through because he needs to be a support man for Alan O'Connor when he gets into space. And as we can see here in the next slide, it takes a nice little bit of work from Alan O'Connor, because he actually, it's not just about carrying the ball. He has to throw a little dummy here, because he's got a 3-on-1 essentially at the moment. He's got Geordie Murphy out on his left. He's the man in the middle with the ball in his hands, and he's got Rob Herring out on his right. So what he's done there, there's a Northampton Saints defender right in the corner of the screen. He's kind of fixing that defender. The defender has to worry about Rob Herring on his inside as well. So he throws a very nice little dummy, and it just leaves the Saints defender ever so slightly flat-footed, because he's trying to look over his shoulder to see is Rob Herring going to get the ball. And Alan O'Connor holds onto it, throws the dummy, and goes through the gap. And as we can see again in the next slide, it leads him up to another 2-on-1. He's carrying the ball. Again, really, really good carrying from him. What you want in this situation is, with this 2-on-1, Alan O'Connor needs to fix that Northampton Saints defender, run at him, and hold on to the ball for as long as he can before eventually getting the pass off and leaving Jordy Murphy in space. So he kind of runs back in towards the touchline ever so slightly if we roll it on again. And as we can see, he just fixes that defender, pops it into Jordy Murphy, who eventually gets tackled in a couple of seconds' time by, I think it's Nick Ezekwe covering. But Ulster, they get all their support players up. They go through some really, really quick phases. It's really fast ball. They're attacking. They're getting front foot ball. They're winning those collisions. And a few phases later, John Cooney gets over for the try. They're right back in the game. And all of a sudden, they kick on and win it from there. It was an absolutely crucial, crucial point in that game. It was a risky move to be taking, having just gone behind. It was a big chance that they took. They executed it absolutely perfectly. And it was pretty much the move that got them right back into the game.
We have in Irish rugby over the last decade or so been a little bit snooty about the Challenge Cup and what the benefits are to it. But actually, right now, for this Ulster team to win something in Europe would be huge.
It certainly is. And like in the past, I think, look, there can often be fair reason for it because it's a competition teams don't necessarily want to be in. But I think from Ulster's point of view, they're in this competition not through any major fault of their own. OK, I know they ended up losing their Champions Cup games, but the way the format of the competition went this season, with the way things were postponed, all of a sudden they were thrown into the Challenge Cup. And look, if you're there, you may as well go and win it. It was one of the Ulster players, I think it might have been Jordy Murphy last week, who said, like, this wasn't a competition at the start of the season. We set out to win because they weren't even in it. But when you're there, there's an opportunity to win silverware. We saw how much a Pro 14 title would have meant to them last year. And with the project they've been on under Dan McFarland over the last few years, they've been progressing steadily and steadily. A trophy, any kind of a trophy, would be absolutely enormous for that group of players.
Winning is that habit. And like the fact that they didn't have a Pro 14 semi-final, I think in retrospect that was a mistake from the organisers. They probably could have got it away. I know the number of weeks is very limited and whatever, but actually it would have been really exciting to have Pro 14 semi-finals and finals, and they definitely would have been in it, and they would have given themselves a fighting chance in that as well. So there will be hopefully something tangible for them if they keep going. Next is the Highlanders.
Yeah, so this is one from Super Rugby. I was watching this on Saturday morning, and this was just such an absolutely beautiful try. Again, absolute smoke and mirrors. And look, it takes a little bit of, there's a player being taken out off the ball, there's a little bit of cynical stuff in it, but it's, you know, it's what you want out of your forwards. It's what happens at line out time. It's all part of the game, and we're going to look at it here. So we're just going to look at the setup initially. This is the Highlanders against the Chiefs, which was an absolute cracker of a game, by the way. It went to the first ever game in Super Rugby that went to the golden point, the golden score. So it was the Chiefs who won it with the golden score in extra time. Damien McKenzie kicking a penalty, or was it a penalty or a drop goal? It's escaping me. I wasn't the biggest fan of it, though. It's kind of a little bit like NFL overtime, where all you have to do is get yourself into position, you pop over a kick, and that's the game done. But look, we'll get back to what we're analysing here. This is a line-out, early stages of the game, inside the Chiefs 22. And we're just going to look at it. It's a simple six-man line-out. And standing at scrum half is a flanker, James Lenchies. So I just wanted to give you an idea of where everyone was setting up. So if we move on to our next little slide, as we can see here, what's happened is the ball is thrown in. It's just taken in the middle of the line-out, coming down to the ground. James Lenchies, wearing number 7, you can see he is stepping in to rip the ball. And, you know, in this situation, he can either set up the maul or he can rip it and act as the scrum half. But what they have here is you can see number 6, which is Shannon Frizzell. What he's doing is he's running a real arcing line right around the back of the line-out. And in a lot of situations, this would be a standard enough attacking play. You'd have someone looping around like that, taking on the ball and running out into the open space, getting them back out into the centre of the pitch. And the other person to watch out here is number 8, Kazuki Himena. Because what he does is he steps up, and you can see the player opposite him, the chief player, he's just going to block him and create a little bit of space.
Is he allowed to do that? Like if he binds with the 3, is he allowed to block whoever's coming through?
No, because you have to enter the maul from the hindmost foot, from the back of the maul. So if he wants to be entering a maul here, he has to be coming in from behind James Lenchies, who is ripping that ball there.
Or
this is where the little bit of cynical play comes in. Essentially what he's doing here is he is just taking out a player off the ball.
But the maul hasn't formed yet, right? Because the ball is still in the air. The maul is about to form and may not form.
Yeah, so he's just basically blocking a player off the ball.
This is the miracle moment of creation that we're about to watch here.
Yeah. So if we roll it onto the next one here, what we can see is they're in the red circle.
Oh, yeah.
He's just stepped up and just blocked that player ever so slightly.
Right.
So his vision is blocked, his movement is blocked. And as you can see, Lenchies, who has the yellow arrow just above his head, he has ripped that ball and he's moving so that he's turning his body out as if he's just going to pop it out to Shannon Frizzell, who's still running that arcing line and darting back out in between the Chiefs player and in between the referee.
And there's no maul here at all, right? Because the line out is over.
Yeah, the ball is out at this stage. It's been ripped out.
So is everybody in front of the ball from the Chiefs are in blue, right?
The Chiefs are in, or no, the Highlanders are in blue.
So the Highlanders, are all of those players, do they need to release their opponents or what's the, like?
No, because we'll say as the ball was taken down, the Highlanders player come to ground. The fact that those Chiefs players have stepped up and tried to engage with them, there was a maul formed there for like a split second.
Okay.
So there's nothing else illegal going on there. Those Chiefs players who are, or Highlanders players who are in front, they're not blocking or anything. They were a part of a very, very, very short maul.
Okay.
But what Lenchies is doing here is he's turning his body as if he's just going to pop it back outside to Frizzell, who's running that line outside. And crucially as well, have a look at the left side of our screen. This is our Chiefs scrum half, who's doing a little bit of ball watching. He's got his eyes out into the open space of the field. He thinks Shannon Frizzell is going to be running that line and taking it out. He is just watching what is happening with his defence out on the far side of the pitch.
Uh-oh.
And if we roll it on one more time, we can see Mr. Lenchies has just dummied the ball. He has dummied it out to Shannon Frizzell, who's kept running that line.
Wow.
But he's darted out. He's turned down towards the blind side. And as you can see, you've got, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 Chiefs defenders all looking straight out into the open field, out onto the open side of the pitch. He's just running in behind them. And as we can see then in our next slide, it's a simple 2-on-1 in the 22 and he goes over for a try.
All right, excellent. Did he get the pass away to the hooker? Or
no, he just went himself in the end. He did a little bit of a show and go. But if we go back to that last slide as well, we can see, we can see on the right of him, that's our scrum half who was doing a little bit of ball watching. He's been caught out now. He was caught on the hop. He had a little bit too much ground to make up and in the end he couldn't cover and it's a try. It was just a lovely, lovely worked try and involved a little bit of jiggery pokery, as Mr. Bill McLaren would have said.
The proximity to running back plays in the NFL from lineouts, I hadn't realised just how much of the setup you can actually fix. So I think we're going to see more and more of this now, right, where they get increasingly complicated.
Oh yeah, and look, we've been seeing things like these for years. These aren't necessarily brand new moves or anything. It's just that every now and again, a team comes out with it. It's the type of move as well that you can't really try more than once in a 2 or 3 game stretch. Like what the Highlanders would have been doing there is over the course of the last couple of games, they would have used that move where Shannon Frizzell was looping around and the ball would have actually been passed out to him on a couple of occasions. So teams would have researched that, you know, they would be knowing what the Highlanders
would
have been
doing.
Well,
the scrum half thought
he was looking out. Yeah, that's
I'm a genius. I know exactly what you're doing here, lads. Yeah.
But you just have to pick those moments to do it. And it was the same with Ulster a couple of minutes ago as well. They're not going to be able to try that move out now for another couple of games because they're just going to have to wait for the right moment. And it's about executing it perfectly when you can. So the next example we're going to go to is from the Leinster-Exeter game on Saturday evening. Now, this was another little move that Leinster tried out, which the move itself came off. It's just that Exeter dealt with it really, really well and actually ended up turning the ball over and winning a penalty off the back of it. So it's kind of an example where both sides executed it perfectly. It's good preparation by Leinster because the line-out move itself worked really well, but the Exeter Chiefs defence were so sharp and they were so ready and it just took excellent game management. And it just kind of summed up a first half where it was two genuinely brilliant teams cancelling each other out with brilliant, brilliant rugby. So what we're going to look at here in our first slide is this is the lineout just outside the 22. At the back of the lineout, the yellow arrow is Jack Conan standing towards the tail end. It's a 7-man lineout, full lineout. So what Jack Conan is going to do is he's going to be looping around on this near side to take the ball off. Take the ball off the Leinster jumper, and we're also highlighting then as well with the red arrow, that is Scott Fardy. So he's just going to again loop around into the front of the lineout, and he's going to be kind of creating that little block like we saw the Highlanders number 8 doing in the last sequence as well. So if we roll it on here, What we can see is the ball is in the air. It's been taken in. If we look at Jack Conan, he's continuing his little arcing run around into the 5 metre channel. And we're also going to look at Scott Fardy there, who has come in around the front. And what he's doing is, opposite him is Ben Moon for the Exeter Chiefs. So he's just going to step up. And again, like we saw in that last Highlanders play, he's just going to create that little block. He's just going to slow Ben Moon down and hopefully create, excuse me, a little bit of space for Jack Conan to run into. What we also are looking at as well is Luke McGrath, because he's obviously ready for this. It's a pre-planned call. He's looping back around to the open side because he wants to be there as support for Jack Conan in the hope that he actually makes that break and he gets the ground and gets into the 22. And I suppose playing that little Antoine Dupont role where you're just kind of popping up on a shoulder ready for an offload. So we'll roll it on again. So as we can see, the line-out is taken. We can see Scott Fardy in the red. So he has just stepped up. And as you can see there, he's just kind of collided with the Exeter player, taking him out of the game ever so slightly. And Jack Conan has taken that ball down and he's just going to try get into that space. He's got Ronan Kelleher just outside him if he wants to get an offload in. All depends on what the Exeter Chief defence does there. Their scrum half, Jack Maunder, is kind of standing in that 5 metre channel trying to guard it. Does he cut it? Does he, you know, bite inside and go for Jack Conan? Does he try hang off and take Ronan Kelleher? That's all for Jack Conan to decide when he gets the ball. And as we can see as well, we have Luke McGrath continuing that run around the outside. And the white circle, that's Dave Ewers. I just want to pick him out because he has a crucial role in a couple of seconds. So if we roll it on, as we can see, so Jack Conan has taken that ball. Jack Maunder, the scrum half, he has come in and he has reacted really well. He has tackled Conan and Conan is just popping that ball out to Ronan Kelleher, who has plenty of space now. We can see in the red circle, that is Luke Cowan-Dickey and Johnny Hill. They have reacted really well. They know what's coming from Leinster and they're scrambling back straight away. Our yellow arrow just above, that is Luke McGrath trying to run that line outside. But the white arrow, that is Dave Ewers, who does really, really well. He has burst off the back of that line out because he's anticipating what Conan is going to do here. He is scrambling back for his life and he knows that ball is going to be offloaded to Ronan Kelleher in a split second. And if we roll it on one more time to our last little clip, we can see the tackle is made just inside the 22, right on the touchline. And we can see there as well, Luke McGrath has probably ended up, not through any fault of his own, overrunning that line because he's been guarded very well by Luke Cowan-Dickey and by Johnny Hill, who have kind of spotted a marking around the back of them and they're just kind of running back slowly back towards the ball. Luke Cowan-Dickey in the end comes around the back of Ronan Kelleher. He gets in over the ball and he wins a penalty. So from start to finish there, it's actually a very well executed move by Leinster, but it's brilliant, brilliant defence by Exeter as well to actually get back and cut it out and win a penalty.
Neil, I know yourself and Johnny were obviously Johnny Murphy on commentary for that game on Saturday for us. Like you mentioned Jack Conan there, Rhys Ruddock as well was excellent in that match. But how complete a performance is that from the Leinster back row there at the weekend?
It's pretty complete, I would say, Shane. And not even back row, like Ronan Kelleher as well was an absolute menace over the ball. Josh van der Fleer, we will say as well, though, was outstanding. And it's just frightening the depth they have in the back row because, you know, they had three Irish internationals out there in Rhys Ruddock, Jack Conan and Josh van der Fleer, but they were also missing Irish international Quaylen Doris, Irish international Max Deegan, Irish international Dan Levy. They were missing future Irish international Scott Penny as well. Like, the list of options they have at back row is utterly ridiculous.
That's terrifying.
we're nearly going to make this, I think. We've two left, so number two is Ireland and a scrum against Wales.
Yeah, so Ireland against Wales and the Women's Six Nations in association with Guinness at the weekend. Absolutely battered Wales set piece, both line-out and scrum. There was one huge, huge scrum in the first half, though, we're going to have a look at. And it's just some pretty simple stuff. It's just getting body positions right, taking advantage of some poor body positions from the Welsh players, and as we can see, walking right through them. So our first little clip here, it's a scrum in the first half. Initially, what we'll just look at as well is, we would have spoken a lot during the Men's Six Nations about the way Ireland were setting up for the scrum. And the Irish women's team are doing something ever so slightly different. We would have spoken about how the Irish players, the second and back rows, were all starting with both knees on the ground and they were coming up into an upright position all together on the call of crouch. But what we can see is it's the second rows and the flankers that are both starting with knees on the ground. But Ciara Griffin, number 8, this is the one slight difference that the Irish women's team will be using at the moment. She's standing upright and she's just going to wait for those second rows and her flankers to come up with her as well. And as we can see then on the other side, the Welsh number 8, She's doing something similar. She's actually doing something what Ireland would have been doing last season, which is the number eight, almost kind of hanging back, pulling the two second rows together with both her arms and just kind of squeezing them in together. But I just wanted to set that out initially. We'll roll on to our next little clip here. And as we can see, this is the ball just about to go in. And it's just good. It's just simply down to good body positions from Ireland, poor body positions from Wales. If we look at Ciara Griffin at number eight, we've got our flankers, good body, good backs parallel to the floor. And Linda Zhugang there at tight head prop. It's again, good angles. Her position is square and straight. Her body is parallel to the ground. And we can see virtually 90 degree bend at the hip and then around 120 degrees at the knees. But in comparison, as you can see, the Welsh loose head prop, she is standing, you know, her body, her head is above her hips. So she's creating a little hole for Linda Zhugang to attack and drive into. And as we can see, even then the number eight, she's driving up. So there's too many players who have their heads above their hips. And that's where you get absolutely exposed in a scrum. And if we roll it on again, what happens is Wales don't get the hook initially. The ball comes in. It just gets trapped in the front row. And Ireland, if you listen to the footage when you're playing it back as well, if you want to go back, it's as you can see, it's just after the 20-minute mark. If you go back and listen to the footage, you will hear the Irish call just as the ball goes in. There's someone in that Irish scrum who is setting that call. And as it's, you know, it's ready, ready, ready. Ball goes in. And now, and they all drive through. And this is the follow-through. Wales get absolutely decimated, as you can see. They have players all over the floor. But what's a really good thing to see is you've got Linda Zhugang there and Cliona Maloney, tight head and hooker for Ireland. And even though the scrum is splitting all over the place, that is really, really good form. It's a really tight bind because they are still square and straight. Their shoulders are aligned with each other. Their backs are going in the same direction. You can see they're driving square, they're driving straight, and they go straight through Wales and absolutely butchered them.
All right, yeah, and not a million miles away from the Jack Conan body position you were showing us for the Ireland scrum in the men's Six Nations just recently as well. So, speaking of the scrums, right, we've got to get into Leinster's new signing.
How long do we have? Are we going to get there?
4 minutes.
Oh, geez, we did it.
Well done, lads, well done.
Ala Alatoa.
Yeah.
He's a tight head.
He certainly is.
A 29-year-old tight head, but Leinster have an oversupply of world-class tight heads, unless... They need three.
I honestly don't know about whether they have an oversupply of world class tight ends. Because yes, they have Tadhg Furlong, they have Andrew Porter. Both of those I would consider to be world class. Michael Alalatoa is also up there as well, a brilliant, brilliant prop, and has been part of a seriously impressive Crusaders pack over the last few years, who are a brilliantly well organized team. They always have an excellent scrum. It's throwing up a few interesting things. I still don't really know what is going to happen here. There's a lot of people suggesting that this move is likely to lead to Andrew Porter switching back across to loosehead. Personally, I think keep Andrew Porter at tighthead, keep Tadhg Furlong at tighthead. I think you're still going to get 15 games at least next season out of Alalatoa. Now, a lot of people would suggest if you have Andrew Porter and Tadhg Furlong, you're spending, tight heads don't come cheap. You're spending what is probably good money on someone like that. And is he going to be, is he going to be a reserve for big Heineken Champions Cup games? I don't want to see Andrew Porter switch back to loosehead because there's a number of reasons for it. I think the future is a little more clear in terms of looseheads coming through with Ireland. You've got Cian Healy, who's 33 years of age. And okay, there aren't too many players that are proven test experience in their mid-20s at the moment. Dave Kilcoyne is on the far is a little bit younger than Cian Healy, but he's above 30. After that, you have a lot of unproven players, I think there's a lot to choose from. I think you've got Eric O'Sullivan there, who's shown huge promise. You've got Josh Witcherly, who's going to come through at Munster and looks a really, really good player. You've Michael Milne also at Leinster, who's shown good things in the bits we've seen out of him. You have... who else is there? There's so many options there.
What do you think?
Personally, like, it's funny. It's a funny one. I'm starting to think Andrew Porter might actually be pushed over back over to loosehead. I don't necessarily want it because I think there aren't as many clear cut options coming through at tighthead. And realistically, you need a top quality tighthead from an Irish point of view anyway.
I tend to agree with you, and certainly if I'm in his camp. If you look at that map that keeps getting produced of the positions on the field that get the highest pay, the lowest pay tends to be the loosehead, and one of the highest paid is always the tighthead. Like, it's a massive drop in his earning potential for the next 10 years. So I really hope they're paying him tight head money to go to Loosehead if he's going. And if they're not, then I'm like, sorry, lads, no, I ain't doing it. But there's a benefit in having three world-class tight heads in that you could manage all their game time perfectly over the course of the season.
You can, absolutely. And look, just look at this season when Tadhg Furlong was out for so long. The options weren't really there. Andrew Porter had to play a hell of an amount of rugby. And I think if you look further down the depth chart, Tom O'Toole looks a very promising player, but we haven't seen too much of him, we haven't seen any of him in an Irish shirt as well. And I just think there are more potential options at Loosehead coming through. And I think if you were to put Andrew Porter across, there's an element of robbing Peter to pay Paul. I know Rory O'Connor has suggested to me in the past that isn't that exactly what they did initially with Andrew Porter, and it probably is. But also, he's 25 years old. His peak years as tight head are still definitely ahead of him. And if you have Tadhg Furlong and Andrew Porter as the tight heads for Ireland, realistically, you are looking, barring disastrous injuries, you're looking pretty safe at tight head prop for the guts of the next 10 years with Ireland.
Two World Cup cycles, thanks very much, absolutely.
One last point, though, which is a little bit tricky. It might come to nothing. Tadhg Furlong still hasn't signed his new contract yet.
Okay.
Ooh.
I mean, Tadhg Furlong's worth a lot of money.
There's no
team in the world that wouldn't be able to turn him into a massive marketing sensation. Like one of the French teams, any of the English teams.
I would hope to God he's going to be staying in Ireland. I would be saying what might be holding it up is that there's a fair chance if he does sign a new contract, he'd probably be the highest paid player in Ireland, would be my guess. Tight heads always have a premium, and you saw since he came back from injury in the Six Nations just how good he is. He hasn't lost a beat.
But the benefits of having Furlong and Porter to spell each other means that you'll be able to extend their careers. I agree with you, but look, sure, what do we know? It's up to David Nusafora, isn't it? He gets to play God with this kind of stuff.
Or Tadhg Furlong moves to Munster.
And it was all a dream when I woke up. Neil, good stuff. Thanks very much for that. The British and Irish Lions head coach Warren Gatland has confirmed his coaching ticket. It is McBride, Townsend, Tandy and Jenkins, which was in all the papers today. So Rob McBride of Leinster, Gregor Townsend of Scotland, Steve Tandy of Scotland and Neil Jenkins of Wales. I think we didn't talk about this at all, but I think it's good that Andy Farrell is actually not going on this tour and is going to spend the time with the Ireland team this summer.
Definitely, 100%. I would have been a little bit worried when there was talk a couple of months back that Andy Farrell would have been going. Now, at the time, we weren't really sure what was going to be happening with Ireland, but this is going to be, I would say anyway, the most crucial summer period that Andy Farrell is going to have with these players between now and the next World Cup, because he's going to have a good few players away on Lions duty. And this is the opportunity to really get a good look at the likes of Craig Casey, likes of Ryan Baird, Harry Byrne, if he's fit and available for it as well. Someone like Tom O'Toole, as we mentioned over the last couple of minutes, and so many more as well. Maybe outsiders, the likes of Robert Ballacoon at Ulster, Gavin Thornbury at Connacht. There's a huge amount of young players there that could be part of a World Cup squad in 2023. And when you have big name players away on a Lions tour, this is the ideal summer to give them a chance.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.